The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have Frank Isola with ESPN, Sirius XM, NBA Radio, Suns Timberwolves. We're going to start getting into that a little bit with one of the national voices. Frank does a terrific job. His work on Sirius XM is must listen in your mornings and does a great job over on ESPN and other platforms as well. So Frank Isola will be with us. And then we'll go to San Francisco, Jody Jackson. Jody is, of course, with the Diamondbacks there, of course, the Coyotes for years and years doing their pre and their posts along with Todd Walsh. And I want to get Jody's perspective on what happened last night. She was not there. She was with the baseball team up in the Bay Area. So I have Frank Isola and Jody Jackson. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business through the years and always. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their ongoing support. I think obviously the Coyote game last night, I was not there. Eliav from our team was there. I have been frustrated with the Coyotes through the years. So to go there last night and take a spot away from Eliav, who did a great job on the site, I saw no need to do that. I have been frustrated for the fans more than any. I've been frustrated for the sponsors too, because like, you guys, it's a great product. The NHL is great. It's great. But when you go through dozens of team presidents and front office people, all well-intentioned, nice people, and you can't seem to find the right ownership group, and you can't seem to figure out the right building spot, and you hear terms like Los Arcos, and it sends shivers up your spine. For those of you that watched, covered, saw the Coyotes through the years, you know the Los Arcos project seemed to me to be the most logical one, and it didn't happen. And so I'm not going to sit here like, you know, Salt Lake sucks or any of that stuff. I'm not saying that. It's, you know, it's not Salt Lake City's fault that we're in the mess we're in down here. Don't start pointing the fingers at other cities, because it's our mess. We have to own this is our mess. I would like to think that people in positions of authority and power, I would think that there are got to be some big businesses in town today that are shaking their heads, because this isn't a good day. It's not. I wanted to have Jody on just to talk a little bit about it from her view. We're going to get in the weeds. It's just what I do here. So Jody Jackson will come up, and Frank as well. Jonte Porter is where I want to start today, because Jonte Porter is not a name that you're going to hear much. You're going to see it trending if it hasn't already. You're going to hear about it in some circles. It's a guy that's lightly used, Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, Michael Porter Jr. with the Denver Nuggets. I think he's feeling right about now. But Jonte Porter's name is now the first one banned by the NBA for life because of gambling. You know, we're all excited about gambling, all excited about it. And these sports leagues that said they'd never do it, now all of a sudden there's one that gets caught doing it. To think that there aren't more, that's crazy. At one point, somebody put $80,000 down on Jonte Porter. And it's these prop bets where the problems originate. And so we're going to talk to Frank Isola about that in a few minutes. But this is the idea that you're at a sporting event and that you have even a smidge in the back of your mind of, is this stuff fixed? Is this stuff rigged? This goes back to things we even talk about around high school kids. It's all about who's in your circle. Who is in your circle? And there's voices you've got to push to the margins, because if somebody's going to say, man, you made it the NBA, but you put some money here, you give us some inside information, and we're going to go with it, and you're going to make a boatload of dough, and all of a sudden, no, you're out of the league. You got to watch your circle. Got to watch your circle. And so he was placing bets on NBA games while he's in the G League. Prop bets, the participation bets. So I'm going to take myself out of the game, even though I know the prop that I put on myself. And so all of this comes to a head with one dude in Toronto. And me watching the league, how could there not be more than one person? How could there not be that's even tempted by this now that the league is taking the money from them and now we have the side effect? It's the same thing in the NFL. It's the same thing in all sports. You know, prop bets, you could do a lot and dudes think, oh, I'll never get caught, and you get caught and here we are. So there's that. The Coyotes from last night, I saw, if you haven't seen Todd Walsh this morning on his social media, his closing comments last night, they're very eloquent, very well done, very much Todd, in watching Todd's work through the years, very good, very well thought out, and heartfelt, I think is the best way to put it for Todd and what happened with the Coyotes and that organization. Beyond that, I went to the Diamondbacks game yesterday, and they're kicking the ball around again. They are not crisp. I'm going to talk to Jody about this. They're not crisp. And I'm not sure what's going on early in the season. Am I going to push a panic button about a team that, in my view, they've had injuries, they've had some setbacks, they don't have their whole group together. They didn't play well against the Cubs. They didn't really play well in this homestand. And now they go up to San Francisco. Here's a franchise that is, in my opinion, in transition as well. Bomell's up there. It's a big series just to get off and running within the division. You want your division games. I've already banged around Colorado enough. You want to get going in your division games, and you have a big series with San Francisco. Add to that, Jordan Montgomery is going to make his start tomorrow night. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing that. But, you know, the idea of why is this team so sloppy and to point it at one person, you can't do that. It's easy to say, oh, it's the manager's fault. This manager last year managed them to a great season. Okay, it's just early. I'm not going to sit here and make a big deal out of nothing at this point. Get back to me when we get to about May 1st. May 1st, the Dodgers roll in and the Padres roll in, the two teams that are above them right now in the National League. That's, you know, all right. Get some things figured out. The Suns, we're going to get into them next with Frank Isola. Frank also sat down with Caitlin Clark. I want to talk with Frank about where the WNBA is, the growth of that sport. A little bit about Taurasi's comments about Caitlin Clark and Suns, T-Wolves, Durant, all that, Jonte Porter, and more. And then Jody Jackson, that's all next. All right, with the Suns getting ready to take on the T-Wolves, we thought it'd be great to have Frank Isola back on with a Sirius XM, starting lineup, ESPN, covers the NBA, covers basketball in general. He's just with Caitlin Clark, doing some stuff with her. And there's a lot to get to around the Suns. We'll get to it in a second. I just want to go through the news cycle quickly because I got to believe you've got something on Jonte Porter and what this means for the NBA and how it was handled and just the lunacy of what he did. Let's just start there, Frank, from my view.
Yeah, it's also easy to make an example of a guy who was in the G League, comes up to the NBA. I know his brother is Michael Porter Jr., but for the most part, a pretty anonymous player. And what he did is outrageous. And I know people saying, well, he only won $21,000. Why they kick him out of the league? He bet on games, and he was giving inside information to bettors. It's hard to believe with all the players in the NBA. You hope it's not true, but with all the players in the NBA and in the G League that he's the only one.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, I think we all have this idea, and it probably goes back to the 50s with these betting scandals in college basketball where they're throwing the game. And you think of, like, you know, the boxing way back in the day, throwing a boxing match. I don't think, you know, now with all these prop bets, it's kind of easier to manipulate. And I understand, you know, all these gambling companies have a lot of people working for them and red flags go up. How about the one bet, the one prop bet? Somebody put $80,000 on a bet. A red flag's not going up when somebody's putting $80,000 on a Jonte Porter prop bet?
Yeah, I mean, in the Donaghy issue, we went through that with the league. They handled that, we believe. But do you ever sit there yourself and watch the games and say, there's something here? I'll just give you, I was the color analyst when Arizona State had their betting gambling scandal. I was that guy. I'm sitting there every night watching games back and forth with Bill Frieder and that team. And I'm saying this team's just really not good. And then you go back and they were shaving. They were shaving points for sure. So do you look at the product now and ever have it cross your mind, Frank?
You know, it's funny. So there was a stretch before the Donaghy stuff came out, there were a couple of Nick games. I remember one vividly. They were playing the Miami Heat, and it was the Miami Heat coming off a championship with Shaq was still on the team. Dwayne Wade was on the team, and the Knicks weren't very good. Pat Riley was still coaching the Miami Heat. Now, I forget the exact number, but it was a crazy amount of free throws the Knicks took compared to Miami. It was something like, I'll give it like a roundabout number. It was like 33-5. And this is a team with Shaq and Dwayne Wade. All they did was go to the free throw line. And in that game, the Knicks, the Heat were called for two defensive 3-second calls, the illegal defense. And Pat Riley also got a technical foul. And when, you know, I would always keep, every year the Knicks would send you a book with all the box scores in it, the final box. And when the Donaghy thing happened, I went to the book, and sure enough, in that Miami game, he had repped that game, which is kind of the way games, you know, which is a way to manipulate the game. You could have a star player and call two fouls on him in the first quarter. That kind of changes a lot because clearly that player is coming out, and calling a lot of fouls also is another way. I mean, clearly it's something that the league monitors, because if you don't have integrity in your sport, right, you're basically wrestling. But let's, you know, the NBA and the NFL, all these leagues pursued these gambling companies because of all the money that's being thrown out. I don't gamble, but I do, you know, I understand that some people do it and they don't bet a lot of money. They just do it for fun to keep their interest in the game. But these are kind of the problems that you're going to have once you kind of embrace the idea of gambling. It's the way of life now.
Frank Isola with us for a couple of minutes. The impact of Caitlin Clark in the WNBA, I don't want to just skirt right past that, your view of what's going on in the league now. I was the Phoenix Mercury's first play-by-play guy, bounced around on planes with Nancy Lieberman and Cheryl Miller, 3-1 on Southwest, and they're still flying that, by the way,
yeah,
on the ladies' side. What do you think the impact, Frank?
Well, I think you saw it right away with the amount of people that watched the draft the other night, 2.4 million was the number on ESPN. I actually went to the draft and I did a bunch of interviews from there, including Caitlin Clark. It's just a phenomenon. There's no, you know, there's no other way to describe it. And I keep saying, you know, if you look at Zion when he played his 1 year at Duke, it just became larger than life. And all the games were like an event. And Caitlin Clark, I think that was certainly the thing this year. She's just so unique in the way that she plays. And there are obviously other great women's players, but she was kind of the first to do what Steph Curry was doing, taking these like logo threes.
Yeah.
And when Steph did it, you kind of looked at him like he was a bit of a freak. They're not great shots. Now you see so many other NBA players do it. So her game was really unique. She's ultra competitive. She did make it to two back-to-back national championship games, so that all plays into it. Race, I think, on some level plays into it, but Breanna Stewart, remember at UConn, won four straight most outstanding players at the final four. She won four national championships. She barely ever lost, and she didn't capture the imagination of the country the way Caitlin Clark did. So we'll see if the WNBA could capitalize on it. Certainly right now they have. I don't think that it's helped that some of the other players seem to be a little jealous of her, either current or former players. And guess what, Brad? They're going to get real jealous because the story came out last night that she's getting an 8-figure deal from Nike. So that's at least $10 million. I think you might see even more backlash from that.
Frank, I'm looking forward to visiting with Diana Taurasi because I need her to explain to me some of the comments that she had with Sue Bird during the playoffs, the NCAA tournament, about her day is coming. I get it. You're 40 and you're just saying, I'm not going to hand this over to you. That it's going to be easy. You're going to be playing with grown women. But it got to a line where, and there's some backlash out here towards Diana with those comments. I don't know if you saw them, heard them, but
yeah, I know
what you're referring to. Yeah. I think there's something there.
Yeah. And, you know, Breanna Stewart, who, you know, is a terrific player. She was asked during the tournament, I think it was during the Final Four, can she be considered an all-time great if she doesn't win a national championship? And Breanna Stewart said, no, she has to win a national championship to be considered an all-time great. How are you going to say that? She's the all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball. She made it to back-to-back national championship games. The only game that South Carolina has lost the last 2 years was to Caitlin Clark in the semifinals last year. And by the way, all right, so let's hold it against her that, unlike you, she didn't go to UConn to play with 10 other All-Americans and try to win a national championship. And the stuff here was like the thing that turned me off the most. I get like the idea of trash talking and rookies coming into the league and people are hard on them. She wasn't in the league yet when Diana Taurasi was saying this stuff. And you're 41 years old and you're going after a 22-year-old girl who it's capturing the imagination of the country, which is only going to be good for the WNBA. I think there's some petty jealousy there. Even Lynette Woodard, who held like the all-time record, was invited to Iowa's game to see Caitlin Clark break the record. So they have her at the game. She gives Caitlin Clark a big hug. She's complimenting her. Then she's doing some kind of speech during the Final Four, and she knocks her again. So it's amazing. Like, I don't understand the players. You finally have more people than ever before paying attention to it. This player is a transcendent player that's only going to be good for the WNBA. You kept telling us, watch, pay attention to us, notice us, notice us. We're now noticing, and you're knocking the one player that's making us notice. So it was a little strange.
Yeah, Annie Myers-Drysdale's out here, and I consider Annie, we go through great people first and foremost. And then, of course, she was drafted in the NBA, and she's sitting here loving this. She's wrapped her arms completely around this and can't get enough of it. And
Brad, let me just say this, too. You know, I mentioned the Zion comparison before. Yeah. You know, remember, Barack Obama went to Durham to go watch him play. Like, it was a big thing to do. You know, this year, you know, Caitlin Clark, you know, last summer I looked at the Iowa schedule because I wanted to see when she was going to be coming to the East Coast. I think the NCAA blew it by not having her play. She should have played a game at Madison Square Garden, somewhere in L.A., Chicago, the United Center, and maybe somewhere in Dallas. They should have had to play four games all over the country. Anyway, she came and played Rutgers on a Friday night in early January. I couldn't get tickets to the game. I didn't want to spend too much money on them. But then when she came to Maryland, that's where I went to school. So she went to Maryland on the first Saturday in February. And I drove down. The game was actually a nationally televised game. I drove down to Maryland to watch her play. And when you see her play in person, it's impressive. I mean, I keep saying she reminded me a little bit of Steph Curry, the way she shoots the ball. She's got a little bit of Jason Kidd in her, the leadership in the passing. I think she's got a little Steve Nash in the way that she handles herself, the dribbling. And then I said she complains like Luka Doncic to referees. So she had like a lot of the characteristics of current and former NBA players.
Should she be on the Olympic team? Like, it should be a question. Yeah. Like, come on, guys. What are we even waiting for on this one?
Yeah, but what you should do, why don't you have the president of NBC Sports on and ask him if he wants Caitlin Clark to be on the Olympic team? I get it. It's going to rub some people the wrong way. But what's going to happen is if she's not on the team, people are going to say, why didn't you put her on the team? And then if she does make it, I get people are going to be upset. I would put her on the team. I think it would be much more interesting. Here's the thing about the women's national team. They never lose. You know, at the Olympics, you know, the women's gymnastics team becomes a big story. And we all become experts at gymnastics after like 2 days of watching it. The swimming becomes a really big deal. The women's soccer team always becomes a big deal. But we don't always win in those events. The women's basketball, our team has been so dominant. They're almost like a victim of their own success. And I would put her on the team. If I would put her on the team, NBC would market the heck out of her to see her in a, you know, to go from a few months, an Iowa jersey, Indiana jersey, USA jersey, back to an Indiana jersey. You don't think, how would the WNBA not want her on that team? You know, NBC wants her on the team. I'm sure there's a lot of players in the WNBA that don't want her on that team.
And usually when NBC wants, NBC gets. Kevin Durant. So here we go with the Timberwolves, and KD came out here. I had you on right after the deal. I think this year already here in Phoenix, he's been great, but the team's been really uneven, hit by injuries. Are the big three able to make it happen? Your view of T-Wolves, Suns, and Durant postseason here in Phoenix, Frank?
Yeah, they beat him three times, right, during the regular season. Phoenix did. I spoke to Chris Finch the other day. We had him on the radio show. And he said they got to be more physical. He felt that the Timberwolves, the last week of the season, 2 weeks of the season, just weren't physical enough. So I think that's probably their plan, to try to be a lot more physical with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. You know, the one thing about Kevin Durant, he's not the same player he was 5 years ago, probably not the same player he was 3 years ago. He still has a lot. And I thought, you know, you look at the Phoenix Suns, you know, I could see them going pretty far. You know, I would not be shocked if they're in a conference final. They could get knocked out in the first round. They could make a conference final, because you think about the three players that they have. Those guys are all talented, but especially in the case of Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, you do have two guys that in a playoff game could give you between 14, even 20 points in a fourth quarter. Like, they have the ability to get that hot. Can the team play enough defense? That remains to be seen. They're not going to get an easy draw. And let's face it, if they get out of the first round, you get the winner of Denver Lakers, correct?
Which
will be tough as well. But, you know, you have a team with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker. A lot of coaches would like to have that problem.
Yeah, it's been frustrating out here, I think, for the fan base because they just can't seem to get it. 25-16 when the big three are together.
Yeah.
They've had some point guard issues. Beal, they've moved over there in the last 10 games or so, but we'll see. I appreciate you, as always, chopping it up. Thanks, Frank.
All right, thanks a lot. I'll see you.
It's good to see Frank Isola. You can hear him on SiriusXM Starting Lineup, see him on ESPN, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, from San Francisco, Jody Jackson. And look, she's wearing Coyote gear today. That is so, so nice on this Thursday morning. Let's just start with, you're on the road with the Diamondbacks. We'll get to them in a minute.
Yes.
What was last night like for you? Did you go somewhere in San Francisco because you had to leave yesterday afternoon? Did you see the game last night?
I really didn't see the game. What happened was I had my family record it on our Cox app. Okay. So
yeah.
Contour app, or, you know, recording it. And then what I didn't really know, first time I had tried it, is watching it back on the Contour app. So I had to wait for the game to kind of end. I couldn't see the streaming. It doesn't work in California. It doesn't work in other regions.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's right.
I knew, obviously, it was really hard in a way to not be there. And then in another way, it was almost easier because then I wasn't exposing myself to this complete emotional depletion.
Yeah.
But yet it happened anyway. And so, you know, I did watch, how did I watch the last few minutes? I guess it was once I got onto that app. And then, you know, I mean, Matt McConnell, Tyson Nash, Todd Walsh, I didn't, you know, hear the radio side, but Heater, Bob Heathouse, and Lindsey Fry, I'm sure that they did an amazing job as well. But I mean, they did a terrific job chronicling what was happening and then also just emotionally going through the years and the memories and all of that. Had to be hard, you know, and then seeing the fans. So yeah, it was a very, very tough night all around.
Have you done that yet?
Have I done what?
Have you grieved? And that there was grief.
I mean, a little
last
bit,
night,
yeah.
Last night there was some grieving. You could, I mean, an obvious. Obviously, like Jody, I'm looking at you today and thinking when you pop up with your Coyotes gear on, like you have seen this team through the birth of your kids, the growth of your kids, the life of your kids. And this has been your deal. We've joked through the years about how you're Wonder Woman, quick change from this parking spot to over at this place between the two teams. And the Coyotes have been embedded in your household. Like that's been your gig. So I'm just wondering if you've grieved yet.
I mean, yeah, for sure. Last night was hard. I don't know how Todd kept it together signing off, because that, you know, again, then there's obviously no one better to do that. He was the perfect person. He's always been the one with the last word on those pre and post game shows. I know, you know what that's like doing those for the D-backs years ago and things like that. And, you know, I don't know that the grieving will ever really end, though, because when something's part of your life and then it's gone, it's just difficult. You know, I put together a picture montage and kind of put it together while we were traveling here. And I'm sure I still forgot a bunch of pictures, but it does. It shows my son when he was little, like in the locker room, and then older now on the set with his girlfriend, like hanging out, and they love the Coyotes. So, you know, and Todd had been there literally for everything. So that had to be, as much as it's excruciating for all of us, I can't imagine how it is for him, and yet he was able to deliver such a beautiful message on television. So I think the grieving continues.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I don't think it's ever going to stop. But if there is a light at the end of the tunnel, it is. I thought Shane Doan put it well last night. I don't know if you saw what he said beforehand. He met with media in a scrum, and you know this was a chapter. And that they're mm-hmm. paraphrasing, that there's more to come. Obviously, with his son, he was trying to keep it together, and his son going off now. But I guess I look at this from being here the day that they arrived with obstructed view seats, mm-hmm. and I look at all the business side of it. I haven't been there day in and day out like you, obviously, or Todd. But what I've seen from a distance is we have to get this figured out with the right people. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus. I'm not looking for you to do it. It's just my view is we don't have the right people politically. We don't have a building situation here in the Valley that is tenable. I think the other owners of the three remaining franchises are going to look very long and hard at what does happen moving it forward. But I believe that this is a hockey town. I have no question. The people that say, oh, well, the media didn't support, media is spread thin. Okay. So if the team's not good and they haven't been good, you can't expect media to get resources over there every single game. So, you know, and the fan base, the fans are the ones here, Jody, that I feel bad for. It's tough seeing you today talking about
it. It's of course the fans. It's the people that was their community.
Yes.
You know, I'm lucky enough that I have a lot of different communities. You know, I'm blessed beyond belief. But for a lot of people, the Coyotes were their thing. You know, it was their community, the people that they hung out with, the kids that play hockey, you know, and the youth hockey is going to continue. I know Lindsay Fry is going to fight for that. I would hope the NHL, you know, there would be sources that could give funding toward that so that the game of hockey will carry on. But of course, the goal for those kids is to watch the Coyotes and dream of being in the NHL. So, you know, it's just, it is tough. We could do we and many people in the Valley could do hours and hours of a show. No one would watch that, right? It's called a council meeting, right?
Group therapy.
Do a show on why it didn't work and where it should have been. And I think everyone goes to Los Arcos. You know, I heard Shane Doan even talking about it on the radio yesterday morning as I was driving down to Chase Field that, you know, and everyone kind of goes back to Los Arcos, because it seems like that would have been the best spot for it. Now, again, for a person who drove out to the West Side for 19 years, it's really hard when you hear like, well, it didn't work out there. I don't know the financials. And that's the thing. I can't really comment on people that were willing to pick up the tab year in and year out, including the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, did it work on the West Side? I got to go do a job and walk into a building and smile and see people that I love every day. So for me, it felt like it worked, but I'm not the one looking at the books, right? So you could say, could they have just stayed out there and signed the 20-year lease out there, which I know that the Morellos did not want to do. And I assume maybe the NHL didn't want to do. I'm not really sure how that went down, but it's just, you know, it was a celebration of the love of that community last night. And yet it's hard at the same time. It's extremely hard.
What do you think needs to be said that hasn't been said about the Coyotes, from your view?
Gosh. Well, I know the media, as in maybe the mainstream media, as in maybe the local affiliates or whatever, haven't necessarily said all that much. But a lot has been written. I mean, there's been a lot said, Brad. There really has. You just have to look for it. Not you personally, but people. I mean, there have been Craig Morgan and that group, you know, at PHNX. They do a great job. I mean, Todd and our broadcast group have done an amazing job over the years chronicling the stories. And then the business side, there have been business stories written about it. There's been a lot written. I mean, I think if anyone watched a little bit of that game last night, they saw everything they need to know. Now, were all the fans in there that wanted to be in there? No, we know what happened with the small venue, the tickets and all of that. But I think just hockey works. That's clear. You and I know that. It's just in what format, in what building, with what owner, with what support around them. I know we know a whole lot now that we didn't know back then. So I think that the next venture, and I've heard from a lot of people that really feel like it will be back. It's just a matter of, you know, when and where and how.
Sure. No, it cannot be brought back, from my view. It cannot be brought back to, we're going to put it at Mullet for a few years while we build something.
Yeah.
It feels to me, and just around town, what I've heard is that Matt Ishbia is the guy that could look at this and say, you know, the arena down here is older. I could take hockey, or he could leave hockey behind him, but what I'm hearing around town is that there's more than just a little bit of an eyebrow raised about what's going on, because the business side of it, just pure business, you're filling more nights in your arena. That's it. The current arena, we saw how that worked out to begin with when it was America West. It didn't work. And I like getting in the weeds on this stuff, by the way, because fans are asking me right and left, what do you think? What do you think?
Right.
You know, that we've got to have a solution, not the, well, we hope it'll come back someday. No, let's get down and dirty on this now and find leaders in the community and find, I think there's enough sponsor dollars in the community. I really do. It's just the right ones that need to be talked to, tapped on, whatever.
And I've talked to fans and I've talked to people, sponsors, you know, sponsors over the years. There are people in particular that would love to be part of something bringing hockey to the Valley. Like they, and I don't know financially if that's, you know, again, maybe it's not one person. And there, we know there were groups. There was Ice Edge when they owned the team. That was a group of people. There are a lot of ways that you can do this. I just, for, I think that obviously it had to be taken out and then built back from scratch, which is what hurts a little bit though, right? Because, and I know they're preserving the logo, the brand, the history and all of that. At least that's what I've heard. I don't.
I've heard that too. Like, you know,
the, I mean, the team came from Winnipeg. We talk about franchise records, the franchise records for the Coyotes, they do include Winnipeg. And if we say Arizona Coyotes, Arizona Phoenix Coyotes, that's a separate, but yeah, I, they're, the weeds look real tall for me. I mean, but yes, I think it's great if over the next few months, there are people that are going to dig in and really try to figure this out and see a model that could work here and people that could resurrect it.
Because you'd love to still be involved, right? You're not turning the page.
Of course.
This is just,
yeah, I mean, because the people are the same. I mean, the people that I've met through the years, the people that, you know, live and breathe hockey, they're still going to be here. They're not moving, you know. They love the Valley. They love Arizona. And, sure, I, you know, for me, as it's always been, Brad, you mentioned me running around town and doing all those different things and, you know, literally, you know, changing in the car at times to go from job to job. And I enjoy that. So I'm, you know, at the same time, focusing in on the moment and what's going on, with covering baseball, keeping me busy. It is a blessing that that is keeping me very busy right now and excited about the team, you know, too. That was what was really special last year. But yeah, I mean, of course, I can't, you know what though, there's so many people right now that are kind of reeling from this that for, I don't, you know, I'm just, of course, if the team comes back, I would love to be involved. But I just think right now, it's about taking care of the people that are affected the most by this.
And you're reeling a little bit, I would say, just chopping it up with you for 15 minutes. As...
yeah, you didn't expect me to be on the verge of tears this morning, right?
No, but there's nothing wrong with tears. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's part of the journey of life. 9-10 for the baseball team. Okay. So Rodriguez goes on the 60-day. That's not good. And they've been kicking the ball around. They've not played crisp baseball through 20 games. What is going on? I mean, I'm not pushing panic buttons. It's like, this is not Torrey's team that we're used to seeing.
Well, you know, I think the loss of Perdomo changes the dynamic in the infield for sure. And, you know, now you've got a young player playing in there in Blaze Alexander. You've got other players in Kevin Newman, who just, you know, is new to the D-backs. And Jace Peterson's been over there. So I'm not putting it all, don't get me wrong, I'm not putting it all in the shortstop spot, but that's a big one. Everyone else, it's just been something here or there. And what's amazing when you watch this team the last couple of years is it's exceptional what they had done the last couple of years. And they were really playing great defense even going back before they started winning. You know, even when this team only had 74 wins in 2022, they were a very, very solid defensive team.
Yep.
And I think this is what Torrey was talking about though in spring, and that we have to have a standard and we can't just think we're going to roll out there and get back there and all of that. And the guys know that, but I think it's just another reminder of how it's not easy. And so they've made some mistakes. I mean, you know, yesterday's game, you know, Suarez, who has been pristine over at third, pretty much just kind of lost a ball in the transfer. It's kind of just been one thing or the other. And I think some of it is chalked up to, even though we see these guys play every day, it's still April. So there is a refining, there is a process. I think you're right, though, to be 9-10 with the way that Gallen and Kelly have pitched, you know, those guys have pitched great for the most part. I think Gallen had the one start, he went 5 and Kelly went 5 the other day. I mean, you kind of expect these guys to go 6+ because they're your, I mean, you're going, most times you're going to win those games if you score a couple runs and you do things right. But I feel like, again, you can't have that much pressure going forward. It's got to be help, right? And the help is coming. tomorrow night, Friday in San Francisco with Jordan Montgomery. And I think that's another starter that you can really count on to go deep into a game, to control the game. And then it'll be three of those guys. And then Rodriguez, you know, it's unfortunate. It really is. I mean, when you sign a guy to a four-year deal, $80 million, and Ken Kendrick talked about this when he talked about why not, you know, he talked about in the past signing guys to multi-year deals, and Mad Bum being one, and there have been others, how hard it is when they don't perform or if they're not healthy or whatever that looks like. So really it was the Montgomery signing doesn't even look like the risk right now. When you're shelling out money, $25 million for one season, Rodriguez is like, okay, well, we have 4 years, but so far this is not gone great, right? So that's a little bit disturbing. But the offense, I think, will be fine. I think the offense is going to get better. From what I've seen, they have a lot of dangerous weapons in there. So I think the defense is a real concern because that's the one thing that you count on for this team. And they're going to have to clean that up. I mean, they're just going to have to get better day in and day out and clean those situations up.
Yeah, and Seawald will be back, right?
I mean, yes, Seawald will be back in, I believe, I'm thinking what day is today? So first or second week of May, maybe? And no one's told me that. I just think that's the timing.
Yeah. I mean, so it's... Yeah. It is the, well, they're not all together. It is just out of spring. They are hovering around the middle of the pack. They haven't had a long win streak yet. You know, the other night, Marte did what he is supposed to do. And we just take it for granted. Bottom of the ninth, two strikes. Hits it out yesterday. First pitch, boom. So I'm not that concerned, but I just wanted to get it from boots on the ground with you.
Yeah. And you're right. To be 9-10 is not, you know, they are hanging right in there.
Yeah.
The Dodgers just lost a series to the Nationals. So, you know, you kind of just like look at that and say, okay, well, you know, this is a long season. You know it better than anyone. I mean, you've been through this as well. I mean, baseball's a unique and a rare situation where you really just try to win series. And this is a big road trip. We say that a lot, a big road trip, Giants, St. Louis, Seattle, and then they come home and play the Dodgers and Padres. So they haven't seen the Dodgers until it'll be almost pretty much May.
And that'll be a circus. And that will be,
we
like the circus. I'll let you go off that. Have a great day in San Francisco. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me. See you
soon. Good to chop it up with Jody Jackson. You can watch her on the Diamondbacks TV, DBTV tonight. They play the Giants for four in the Bay Area. And we're back with more after this timeout.